Hi, Eddie here. Red and I have used Zencastr to record all of our episodes of Punk Rock Elite because it's easy, browser-based, and it gives us separate tracks that are easy for me to edit. It can also be used for 4K video too. Maybe we'll try that one day. It's really easy to use. It can do a lot of the editing for you, clipping out your ums and ahs, and adding an EQ to bring out the best in your voice, all from a single website. If you want to make a podcast but aren't sure how to go about it, then Zencastr provides everything you need to record, edit, and distribute your new show to Spotify, Apple, and a ton of other places that people get their podcasts. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use our code PUNKROCKELITE, and you'll get 30% off your first month of any Zencastr paid plan. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story. Punk Rock Elite, a podcast about NoFX. I mean, I hadn't done heroin before, but now I can't get enough of it.
Yeah, very Moorish.
It is. People don't even mention that. And so now, basically, I am that much on heroin that I can't really do much else. And It is a bit like I've been suspended on some string. And
you
I
do really look like a marionette of
yeah,
types.
And I just don't know how to describe that. Mm. And this monkey won't get off my back. That was a little drama Red and I prepared for you about the dangers of drug use, because we are essentially promoting NoFX on the weekly, so we should really do something to counterbalance the irresponsible approach to drugs that NoFX has.
Yeah, if you've been affected by anything that we've said on this podcast, ever
been affected,
do email in.
Yeah, absolutely. We have had some emails, so that's nice. Yes, I was doing that because I was alluding to the fact that we're going to be talking about Strung Out today.
We are, aren't we?
Yes, and I love Strung Out. I am very, very pleased to be talking about them because they're one of those quintessential fat bands for me.
Yeah.
They're just sort of, I don't know if they were day one, but they were very early doors in the age of fat, and they're still going today, and they released an album in 1994 because we've got one of those. We've got a peer pressure today. But how have you been, Red?
I've been very well, thank you. How about you?
I've been very well, thank you, Red Redmond. I am Eddie French. This is Punk Rock Elite Podcast, the podcast about NoFX. I forgot about that. Yes, so both of us are doing well. Yes, not bad at all. Had a nice. It's been busy.
Yeah,
I've been busy in the day. I've been busy in the night. All very, very good. Most pleasingly, recently was I opened Excess Malarkey in Manchester at their
fantastic,
relatively new venue.
Yeah, 53-2.
53-2, yes.
I think it's a temporary venue. I want to say it's temporary, but
I don't know. They seem very pleased about it.
Okay.
They seem to be from talking to Roz and Toby and everyone else there. It seemed that because they've got a new material night there as well on Sundays and stuff. So they're sort of moved in. Their feet are firmly under the table. But yeah, super super fun. Really had. Had a very nice time. What have you been up to?
I have been looking after my new rabbits. They've been neutered and they are slightly better behaved now.
Oh, good, good. Yes, that's it, isn't it? You've got to put a stop to the wilding.
But yeah, other than that, I've just been kind of like hanging out. I've been getting my fiance into Twin Peaks.
Oh, good.
Which is, you know, I do feel like one of those partners. It's like, no, you've got to watch this, or it's like dead good. Like David, he's gonna blow your mind. But That is also who I am. So
no. Look at this bit.
Yeah.
Do you get the relevance of that bit?
Yeah.
No. Right. Well, when you've seen, this is episode 2. When you see episode 6, you'll get the relevance of that bit.
Oh, not even that. Like, when you finish the first 28 episodes, then we can start the season that I actually think is good. And then after that, we can watch all of the YouTube videos about theories.
Oh, imagine that. We're going to firewalk with us together for right? all of this. Yeah.
But also, you know, like, well done to her. She's been very understanding about it all.
Yeah, it's I'm trying to think. Well, I've definitely done that with Emma with some things, and luckily Emma already likes Twin Peaks. When we met, she was already a fan. She had a Log Lady t-shirt and everything. It was, you know, so that one was
nice.
Not that, you know, I was like, oh, that's good. Aside from No Effects, what's the most difficult thing you've got your partner to sit through, enjoy, or at least put up with? We'd like to hear from you. punkrockelitepodcast @gmail.com. We actually have had a few emails.
I would say actually, like, Kate is actually enjoying Twin Peaks, but any of Stanley Kubrick's movies have been a real challenge for her.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw Peter Brush has watched them all recently and was...
Yes, I saw
them.
That.
And he had some interesting and some predictable. I think that's the thing with a lot of filmmakers like that. Like, all the hot takes have been done a long time ago, so they're kind of just sort of, broadly speaking, just sort of general agreements, aren't they? You know?
Mm, yeah.
I'm listening. There's a podcast called Newcomers where Nicole Byer and Lauren Lapkus.
Oh, right. Yeah.
They do a series where it started off where they'd not seen any of the Star Wars films. So they watched them all and then talked about them with people who were like fans of it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then they, and that did really well. They did like all 9 Star Wars films, and they did a couple of, I think they did Rogue One. They might've done a Mandalorian episode. You know, they did some peripheral. There you go. Some peripheral Star Wars stuff, yeah, as well as the main saga. And then that was so popular, they went, well, we'd better do another one. So they did Lord of the Rings and The Hobbit, sadly. And then they did, I think they did The Fast and the Furious, but I didn't listen to that one because I haven't seen any of those and I don't care about cars. But they're doing Scorsese at the moment. They're just doing like all the, like the, like 10 cool of the best Scorsese, or the, you know, what their producer recommends is the best Scorsese films and stuff. And they're like, oh, all of these films, I'm watching it and I'm going, right, well, now I understand a lot of Simpsons things I didn't, and yeah, a lot of men I've been in improv groups with over the years. It's really funny. But so what have you introduced other people to that's been a slog? Because that's kind of fun. But we I will say we've got a couple of album track lists have come in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we got Pat from The Decline, great, brilliant Australian band. Should be you should listen out to them. They're called The Decline. Are they No Effects fans? We'll never know. we'll find out. But hi, Eddie and Red. Here's my track listing for my fantasy No Effects album. I picked 13 songs because that's what First Ditch Effort has. Yeah. But 41 minutes is a bit long for a No Effects album. Both, I mean, to be honest,
I'd say it's just at the cusp of acceptable, I would say.
Yeah, I wouldn't have a problem with a 41-minute No Effects album. It still fits on one CD.
Yeah.
And also, it's 13 songs. There are 25 to choose from. So if you choose 12 or 13, then you're basically cutting it in half, aren't you?
Yeah.
So, we're not... This is just a laugh. It's okay. You know, I love that Pat's gone out of his way to sort of go, look, I know I've done this, but I'm really sorry. He's like, you're fine. So track listing goes The Big Drag.
Good choice.
I Love You More Than I Hate Me.
Okay, yeah.
Fuck Euphemism.
Mm.
The Humblest Man in the World.
Great shout.
Birmingham.
Yeah.
Fish in a Gun Barrel.
Okay.
What I like here is Fake a Wish, brackets, start of side B. So,
yeah, okay, yeah.
So Pat's even thinking in vinyl terms here. So number 7, Fake a Wish. Number 8, I'm a Rat.
Mm-hmm.
Number 9, Derby Crashing, Your Party.
Yeah.
Number 10, My Favorite Enemy.
Mm-hmm.
Number 11, Grieve Soto. Number 12, Lanulium.
Yeah.
And number 13, The Last Drag.
I mean, aside from, you know, like doors and fours being omitted, I think that's pretty solid.
That's not bad at all.
That's good. Well done, mate.
Yeah, it is good. I think that is a strong showing. I'm very interested in the not having my bro can survive cancer, but having Fake a Wish. But there you go. And Fake a Wish that's only like a minute and a half. That's basically a bonus track.
You get that one
for free, don't you? You know, it's like, oh, come on, it's all right. He goes on to say, I think those are the best songs and I like the track order because I think it flows like an album the most.
I think he's done a good job of sequencing. Lovely.
Absolutely. And also he's put a link to NOFX album by Pat Decline. So his Spotify link, we'll put that in the show notes if you want to hear that.
Nice.
Pat has got you covered. So that's pretty good. I did watch Baby Reindeer recently, so the fact that it says sent from my iPhone at the bottom is giving me chills. But if you've not seen Baby Reindeer, by the way, everybody out there, it's the true story of Richard Gadd, the comedian who had a stalker for a couple of years, and it's the adaptation of the Fringe sort of theatre solo show that he did about it.
Two of his shows, because one of them
combined
was about
with Monkey See, Monkey Do.
Yeah,
which was about his essentially being groomed and assaulted by someone in the industry,
mm-hmm.
Comedy industry, to specify. There was only one problem I had with Baby Reindeer in general, which is that he uses a lot. He doesn't play himself. He plays a version of himself. The character's called Donnie.
Yeah.
But it's very much based on his own experience. And he uses some of his real stand-up.
Yes, he does. Yeah. His real actors in it. Yeah.
And I found it deeply insulting when he used as an example of a shit joke, a joke he used to beat me in the Laughing Horse New Act of the Year 2011 heat. So I was like, Richard Gadd, that's one of your shit jokes, is it, Richard? Well, fuck you, mate.
Richard Gadd beat me, and I came second to him in Laughing Penguins New Act of the Year competition, like, you know, 2012 or something that. Thoroughly deserved on his part. What a fantastic comic.
He was brilliant. I really like, he was very anti-comedy, but he was so good at it. Really great. I'm very, very pleased that it's hard work, because I think Monkey See, Monkey Do, he did the entire show running on a treadmill.
Yes, he did. Yeah,
it was because he took up like long distance running to sort of work through the PTSD, kind of, you know, the trauma, that's the word. And so he did that show at the Fringe every day, running solidly for an hour.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's more movement than most comedians do
ever.
yeah. So so if you've not seen Baby Reindeer, it's very, very good. But yeah, just and then you'll understand the relevance of sent from my iPhone. Anyway, Jeremy Braithwaite, forgive me, Jeremy, I rushed your name and said it stupidly, has done 15 tracks for their full album, they've called it. Hi, Ready. Oh, yes. Trying to make Ready a thing. That's cool. As always, absolutely loving the podcast. Particularly enjoyed the recent live pod at MPF. Absolutely gutted not to get to MPF this year, but would have loved to have joined you. Have loved to have you, but hopefully next year. Mm-hmm. Oh, we've got hot takes in here as well. I don't really have any NOFX hot takes, so never messaged previously, but maybe a small one to add now I've had more time to think. Mm-hmm. That's fine. If you've got hot takes, that's just open doors, by the way. If you've got hot takes, as and when they occur, fling them our way. We'll absolutely discuss them. We love doing this. I just want to qualify this with, I hate myself for having this opinion, as I know how much this song will mean to Mike and potentially a lot more people. But I can't stand the song I'm So Sorry, Tony, from First Ditch Effort.
Sure.
Song about the sadly departed Tony Sly. Mm-hmm. My reason for this is I just can't move past the first four lines of the song. In reality, it probably isn't a bad song, but after the line, his songs wouldn't just touch you, they would punch you in the eye, makes me cringe and want to turn the song off immediately. That's the NoFX lyric that makes you cringe.
No, I like this. I think I am. I don't hate the song. I'm sorry, Tony, but there is something that I find quite cringy about it, and I do think it. Obviously, you know, it starts with that line. So I think that that is a really good hot take. Thank you so much for sharing it with us. I've always felt like I'm not allowed to criticize that song because it's about, you know, someone brilliant that we want to, you know, maintain the legacy of. We all love Tony Sly. But I've always found the song a little bit much.
I think that line is probably the weakest line in the song.
Well, he's not a very emotive songwriter, Tony Sly. Like, he was a great songwriter, fantastic songwriter, but I never found myself tearing up.
Have you listened to any of his solo work?
Oh, I mean, a little bit, but maybe not as much as No Use for a Name.
No, No Use for a Name. No Use for a Name. Well, if you'd only heard No Use, I can understand why you might think that, but he had his two albums, Sad Bear and 12 Song Program, are a lot more raw.
Maybe we should do a Tony Sly episode.
We can do a Tony Sly. I mean, I was looking to see if No Use had an album in 1994, but given, well, we could actually do an Under the Influence look at. I might put together the essential No Use for a Name.
That sounds cool, yeah.
The essential No Use for a Name and Tony Sly.
Yeah, that maybe sounds... Yeah, let's do that.
15 songs over all of them, and we'll put that in because, you know, Mike talks about Tony Sly as a songwriter a lot.
Yeah.
So we'll have a look at that. So, yeah, it makes me cringe to turn the song off immediately. I do think the dedication of the song to the loss of a friend is genuinely beautiful, but I wish the opening lines didn't exist or were a lot, lot better. It sounds like a poem a kid wrote.
I mean, that is what a lot of NoFX sounds like.
I do agree that that line, because the first line is I never knew a better writer or a better guy, mm-hmm. which in and of itself isn't particularly bad. I think it's trying to find the rhyme for guy.
Yeah, sure.
Because dude sounds dismissive. Man would be okay, but what do you rhyme with it? So I'm guessing that it's the limitation of rhyming because Mike talks about how a lot of his songs don't rhyme. And he's like, well, you know, you're restricted there. And maybe a bit more freeform lyrics would have been better there. Who knows? But I really like that song. And I'm comfortable enough to get past it, although yes, it is, and it's also just the voice and the piano, so it's very apparent, I suppose.
I don't think it's a track that should have made it into their live set, and it certainly has.
Well, I think that's partly because he did it as Cokie originally,
right?
Like, he performed it in the Cokie things, and then decided to use it for NoFX. So it could have ended up on First Ditch Effort. You're welcome.
Yeah.
I think there was, there's another timeline where that was on, that wasn't a NoFX track. But I think because everyone else in NoFX was friends with him, and obviously you got Karina singing over the top, and Karina Danique, drink everybody, she sang on a few No Use songs. Like, she sang on The Outside, on their cover of This Is a Rebel Song by Sinead O'Connor. She basically sings lead vocals on that. So, and I think also Elise from Dancehall Crashers was also No Use for a Name's manager as well. So they were very tightly connected, Dancehall Crashers and No Use for a Name. And so having everyone involved in that song probably felt more appropriate. But, you know, here we are. It exists. We can't do anything about it now. Anyway, the reason for my email, okay, is that I'm just listening to the half album review and agree with all the points raised. Interesting. Normally someone's got at least one disagreement.
Oh, yeah.
It's definitely a high point of the album era, although I do think tracks 2, 3, and 4 from Double would make a nice little EP.
Yeah.
Yeah, very possibly. I have had to pause the episode, though, as after my first listening to half album, I did make a full album playlist of what I think would make a decent NoFX album made up of songs from Single, Double, and Heart.
Nice.
So here is my list. I did think about sequencing, and I didn't limit myself to the 12 songs that you both did.
Great.
We've got 15 here.
No, I was just saying that's great. And all I think that, you know, when I made, I think ours were like 12 tracks or something like that. I did actually struggle. You know, like there were a couple that I left out that I would have liked to include it. I think maybe like Linoleum.
I think you said I'll put Linoleum in there, but you didn't think of the sequencing.
Right.
Because then you gave your, because I think you were doing 10 because single and double are both 10.
Yeah.
And I said, well, I've been working on a 12 thing. And you went, all right, well, I'll put Linoleum in there somewhere. So yeah. You had 11.
Yeah. Okay. That
makes 12. Sense. So here we got 15. Number one, I'm a rat.
Mm-hmm.
I love you more than I hate me.
Mm-hmm.
Linoleum. My bro can survive cancer. My favorite enemy. Don't count on me.
Yeah.
Joanna Constantine.
Mm.
Fake a Wish Foundation. Fuck Euphemism. Fuck Day 6. Birmingham. Alka Pollock. Fish in a Gun Barrel. The Humblest Man in the World. Your Last Resort.
Oh, okay.
So we've not got any of the sort of what you call the new No Effects sound with either of the drags or
Derby crashing your party, doors and
fours, yeah, those kind of things.
But so I will say, like, I still think that album is that album that he's put together there, or they put together there, is it's stronger than. Single album by itself, double album by itself, half yeah. album by itself. I think that all of these have got merit in them.
It would be interesting to know. I mean, obviously we can't because we know about the single, double, half as they came out. But if they just drop that up, they drop that in our laps, you'd be like, oh, it'd be interesting.
Yes.
I think it's interesting that all of these, like, let me see, we've got 6 or 7 of these songs, only half of them are mic centric,
right?
The others are like, you've got Linoleum about that, you've got Fake a Wish, Fuck Euphemism, Alka Pollock, Fish in a Gun Barrel and stuff like that. You've got songs that are about other things, whereas I think these albums, I think something a lot of people find difficult about these records is that they're very, very mic-centric. And they feel like Cokie territory.
Sure, yeah.
Rather than No Effects territory.
Yeah, I get that vibe with the songwriting on the album era. It like feels very Cokie.
Stuff, yeah. The topics that he's... oddly enough, mic stuff feels very Cokie. Yeah, but, you know, it's, but yeah, and so I think maybe there's only like half... just over half maybe like that, whereas some of them you feel it's really, it feels like he's got blinkers on in a way. But there you go. I do think more thought needs to be given to Fuck Euphemism and Fuck Day 6 being back to back, brackets, too much fuck. But I also
too much fuck
in parentheses, yeah. But I also didn't want to put more than 10 minutes into this. That's fine, mate. Absolutely fine. I don't really have a problem with that. Anyway, keep up the fantastic work. Hopefully see you at the London shows. I'll be there with a few friends.
Cheers. Oh, nice.
Yes, well, we're going to be there on the 12th. So we'll see people in Brixton on the 12th of June, if they're about. Come and say hello. We'll probably give you a sticker and or a badge if you are very lucky. P.S. There is actually a box set of single, double and half album. Double album was released as double album in a slipcase with spaces for single and half album.
Oh.
So there we go. I don't pay attention to the vinyl stuff particularly because it's inconvenient and expensive. So, you know, fine. Yes, that's... thank you very much, Jez. Appreciate it. Yeah, that's all really, really great. We... yeah, very pleased with all of that. We'd better put... big congratulations to last week's winner of the thing. We put out Bad Milk Blood Robot, and their song that they covered was, of course, Dig. And well done to, oh, who's this? No Effects superfan, Ali Bryce. Wow.
No way.
Ali Bryce was the first person to send me their answer. You can continue playing, Ali, but you only get to win once. That goes for everyone. Feel free to keep. We just like getting the emails, but yeah. So it was Dig, which is very, very cool indeed. So yeah, so it's your turn, Red. Which band are you going to choose?
Oh, should we do Austerity Dogs?
Yeah, let's do Austerity Dogs. Liverpool's own Austerity Dogs. We're going to put that in. Let's all throw the cat amongst the pigeons, won't it? right, so pay attention. For the next few seconds, you're going to be hearing Austerity Dogs.
One of the more left-field inclusions on the album.
Yes, absolutely, but delighted to have them. So Austerity Dogs, that'll be the next thing you hear.
That's me inside your...
So that was a little clip of Austerity Dogs' contribution to the tribute album for Punk and Droblick that we're doing. Wind it back if you have to. Give it a listen again and email us. Email only, punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. And if you are correct and the first person to enter in, I will send you a badge, a pin, whatever you want to call it. So there we go. Well, we have had so many lovely days in paradise, haven't we, Red?
Yes, but shall we have another?
Let's have another. Let's hop on over to the body of the episode and enjoy another day in paradise. Strung Out. Another day in paradise. This is a peer pressure because this was released in 1994. Ooh, blimey. It was released on the 15th of May, 1994.
Wow.
Really close to the anniversary. Really close. So that's exciting, isn't it? So Another Day in Paradise, debut album on Fat Records, released on the 15th of May, 1994. It was remastered and re-released on April the 15th, 2014, as a part of the first volume of Strung Out's 20th anniversary. So, they were starting all that stuff. And it is 13 tracks. It is, it's 29 minutes, 21 seconds long. Oh, perfect. Lovely little slice here. We're just going to go through. We've got 13 tracks, all lyrics by Jason Cruz, except for Lost and Mad Mad World. The personnel, we have got Jason Cruz on lead vocals, Jake Kiley on guitar, Rob Ramos on guitar, Jordan Burns on drums, and Jim Cherry on bass. Jim Cherry, I believe, departed, no longer with us. He's met one of the people mentioned in Doornails by NoFX.
Sure.
This beating's for Jimmy for Ultimate Devotion, I believe. Donnell Cameron was engineer. Producer, Fat Mike.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So this was produced by Fat Mike with engineer Donnell Cameron, and Eddie Schreier was mastering it. So I'm going to assume this was at, Motor City Studios or the Motor Studios, sorry, the Fat Mike's recording studio, if he had it at the time, but it doesn't say on here. And that's all she wrote on the Wikipedia page. Genre, melodic hardcore here. So here we go. Had you heard this album before?
No, not this album, no. I've heard bits of Strung Out before. I've always found them quite difficult to get into. But no, I hadn't heard this album. This is my first time listening to all of it. I listened to the reissue the first time round. So that includes like an extra 10 tracks or something.
Oh, okay. We're just going to be going on the King James version.
Yes.
The original version. the irony being King James is not the original version of the Bible. We won't get to that. We're not discussing theocracy here. So yeah, Another Day in Paradise by Strung Out. I like Strung Out a lot. I got into them I was a little late to the party with Strung Out. I'd heard songs on like compilations and stuff like that. But I think the first album I got of theirs and really got into was American Paradox, which I think was released in Oh, yeah, it was by 2002, which was their fourth album. They released an album every... They released 94, 96, 98.
Yeah, they're prolific.
And then 4 years later, 2002, and then 2 years after that, another one. Mm-hmm. So they've been releasing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. So they've released 10 albums in 30 years. It's not bad going, really. In fact, the most recent one's only just come out, I think. Yeah, they've got Dead Rebellion is coming out this year, or has come out very recently, if not.
Yeah, come out very recently.
Yeah, I've seen them a few times. They're, you know, the sort of band you'd see on the Warped Tour. And you know they work very, very hard. They do the business. Have you ever seen them?
I can't remember. I'm guessing not.
Fair enough.
I've seen videos of them play live and stuff, but I don't believe I've seen them live.
They are one of the metallier ones. I always associate.
Yes.
I put them together in my mind, in my totally arbitrary mind compartments. I put them in with like Lagwagon for the sort of...
They're a bit Lagwagon-y. They're somewhere between Lagwagon and Pennywise, but more metal. You're right. Like
they've got the metal thing. They've got harmony guitars and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I really love An American Paradox. Really got heavily into that one. It opens with Velvet Alley, which I think might be up there with my favourite strung out songs. And so I've sort of dipped in and out of them over there, but I hadn't paid a lot of attention to Another Day in Paradise, so I was fairly fresh to this one, I've got to say. What were your initial feelings on it?
To bring it back to the our little intro, I think that this is one of those things where, you know, we were talking about introducing a partner to something that you love that they don't necessarily enjoy.
Yeah.
Well, I think you might have done that this week, Eddie.
Oh, really? I've got to say, right, Another Day in Paradise is not my favourite release by them.
Sure.
I think it shows a lot of potential.
Yeah, I think I would, and I am not in any way questioning their musicality. Like, technically, they are clearly very brilliant and gifted musicians. But I don't think it's got enough hooks to bring me in.
Yeah, I mean, if you give yourself, you can. If you're not sick of Strung Out by now, put American Paradox on.
No, I will, because I think that I could see myself enjoying this band, but maybe not this album.
Very interesting, because it starts off with Population Control. I mean, this first song really gives me Propaganda vibes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
and we are dealing with. We're talking about the Fat Sound here. We're talking about 1994, 2 years since Propaganda's How to Clean Everything came out, which was the Fat Sound thing. Fat Mike is producing it. So it starts off with a sort of a sample, and it starts with a sort of little drum fade-in thing. And then when it starts proper, it's got a lot of start-stop stuff. It's got a lot of that metallier kind of thing, and it really gives me... big Propaganda vibes. That's what I'm getting from it.
It's also quite similar to, there's one particular Pennywise album where they went a little bit metal. I think it's 2008's Reason to Believe.
Oh, yeah.
And this opening track, it reminded me of that a little bit.
Is it a bit riffier? It's a bit more, I mean, you know, Pennywise have got riffs, but they tend to be like sort of chord riffs. They're not like single note.
Yeah.
You know, Fuck Authority is power chords.
Yeah.
But it's still a riff, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
But Pennywise are much more a sort of a punk band. There's no, there's much less metal influence in there. Probably maybe the guitar tone. But it,
like, there's like one particular album where they did like lean into metal. But yeah, other than that, they're pretty straight.
Is it the one where, what's his name left? Jim.
No, it's before Jim left. I think it was like the last one Jim did before he left.
Oh, okay. Fair enough.
And or then, one of the last ones he did before. That.
And then we got the F Word documentary.
Yes.
Where we see him colouring in his beard to so the kids don't think that he's old. We already knew, son. It's all right. It's okay. But yeah, I actually really like this first one. I think it opens. Do you know what? This song promises something that the album I don't feel necessarily delivers on.
I think it's one of the better songs on the album, sure.
I think it starts off pretty strong, this album, with a couple of very good songs. And then it sort of becomes kind of melodyless. There's like harmony. It's weird how they get harmonies but no melody.
Yeah, I think this album really lacks a lot of melodies. I think you're spot on there. I do think there's some. I mean, some of my favorite stuff is around tracks 6 to 9. I think are some of the strongest stuff. But yeah, a real lack of melody despite there being so much harmonies.
It's impressive. A lot of the harmonies come from sort of a lot of oohs and ahs. It's very Bad Religion.
Yeah.
Very Bad Religion backing vocals on this. It's Lost? The second track. This is where the Bad Religion harmonies really start off.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
like, hello. And it's also much more straightforward, like melodic hardcore kind of punk. It's a lot less metal. It feels like a sort of an attempt to be Bad Religion.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think particularly this track doesn't sound too dissimilar to, you know, like a lot of the stuff off Smash. I mean, it's a little bit faster, but I don't know, it's quite quintessential of the time. You know, like I don't think it doesn't stand out amongst a lot of the releases that we're looking at from this year. You know, like we've looked at Dookie, Smash, Let's Go. And I don't think this stands out as much as those.
And Trashed.
Yes, of course.
And I think this is probably the least successful release financially, I mean. You know, like sales-wise, I mean. And I'd imagine that because I think this is the least big band. The band is the least sort of well-known of all the ones we've done. So comparing it to Dookie is very unfair because they're apples and oranges, really. Dookie, like, you know, we said, is a singer-songwriter album with, you know, with that punk arrangement on it and stuff like that. And Smash has got that grungy vibe, which is sort of like a...
Yes.
It's like a sort of Rosetta Stone transferring grunge into punk and stuff like that. And so and I don't think that they were doing that in any deliberate way because it doesn't sound that different to Ignition or
self-titled.
So it was just sort of their natural evolution just happened to hit at that point. You know, if it wasn't them, it was going to be someone else. You know, it was just how it goes. So I'm not accusing Offspring of being like cynical in the way that they approach stuff. After that, maybe. But, you know, so when you have another silly voice novelty riff song, you sort of go, oh, maybe they are trying it again. But anyway, but yeah, I like the first two tracks. I think they promise a lot and they're pretty, pretty good fun. You're going to Drag Me Down. And again, I think I get the feeling this is going to be another one of those albums where we, a bit like the RKL one, where we sort of talk about this in terms of vibe and overall. Because it's like half an hour of what you get. You sort of put it on and you get half an hour of it.
Yeah.
And in RKL's case, with sequencing and stuff, it's not really a journey.
And neither of these albums that we're talking about, Strung Out or RKL, one that we reviewed recently, they're both are kind of lacking hooks and, you know, melodic hooks. They're both missing them.
Yeah, in a lot of ways. So if we do sort of skip around and we don't do, because we're used to sort of going, right, now track two, and talk about that for 5 minutes. You go, right, now track three. And it doesn't really lend itself, some albums don't lend themselves to being discussed that way. But Drag Me Down is super Bad Religion. This is the third time I've written Bad Religion on the same page. And it's got like a halftime middle eight, sort of a bit more of a groove thing going on to it. But it's... this is where the sort of the melodies sort of drop off. The first two, there's some hookier stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it's like by the third song, they've dropped down to sort of more shouty, you know, drag me down, all that kind of stuff.
Hello everyone, Eddie here. Red and I hope you're enjoying our show. If you have been and would like to help us make it a little more easily, then you can donate to us at our Ko-fi page, which is ko-fi.com/punkrockelite, or you can look in the show notes for our link tree. If you can't help us financially, we totally understand, but would love it if you spread the word to other people who would like this podcast. We thank you for your continued support. We massively appreciate it. Back to the show.
Track 4, In Harm's Way. This is the one with that weird little sort of scar 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Right. Which is really weird. And there's a half-time mosh bit. But you know the band that I've written down as to the one it reminds me of most?
No.
Star Fucking Hipsters.
That's interesting.
It feels really like Immigrants and Hypocrites.
Oh, okay, sure, yeah. It reminds me a little bit of Sum 41.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. On All Killer, No Filler, like some of the album tracks on there have a real, like, Drag Me Down vibe to them.
Oh, sorry, no, I'm talking about In Harm's Way.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, In Harm's Way.
Yeah, okay.
Relentless vocal approach. No, 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 no.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And it sort of goes up and down. It's got a little bit of melody, but it's still kind of, it's like a monotone melody.
Yeah.
You get little bits going up and down, and it sounds really like the verse, the bits in Immigrants and Hypocrites.
Yes.
Where the words just stop being anything. Which I believe we sang that together on a sofa in our flat in Edinburgh one year. We were at the Fringe. It was finished. It was over. We'd been out and we'd got a bit pissed because there was no more shows. And then we got back and someone we were sharing the flat with had basically taken over the living room for the month, and we basically couldn't use the living room, so we were just sort of stuck hanging around in the kitchen or our own bedrooms, and it was a bit lame. And then we were there and we just put on Immigrants and Hypocrites and we were going, because neither of us knew the words, so we were just making noises. It was
delusionals and sycophants. I know,
yeah. Having a very nice time with ourselves. But that the vocal line really gave me big feels on that, and I suppose having a weird scar bit in the middle of it doesn't help the Star Fucking Hipster, or, you know,
yes,
the Sturgeon general things. I don't mind this one at all. I think this one's got a bit more to it. It's sort of lively and upbeat and stuff. I think Talking to Myself is the first one where I really go,
Yeah, no, I think at this point I've gone a few times.
You have a lower tolerance
I feel like they're concentrating on the bits that I don't care about and then ignoring the bits that I like about this type of music.
Yes, absolutely. No, I'm melody over everything.
Cuz there's some really intricate and interesting rhythms in this, like guitar rhythms and chord rhythms. But, like, that's not what sets my soul on fire. You know, like, I can take or leave that. But, like, I know that technically it's difficult and they aren't doing nothing. They're doing actually quite a lot on this album.
They are. And they also get much better at it and much better at incorporating that.
Like, for me, like, it's the sound. I think that the musicality on it is fine. And I apologize to any strung out fans that are listening. I don't think the vocals match the skill that's coming from a lot of the other musicians that I'm hearing on this album.
Jason's voice improves immensely after this. Like American Paradox, I think one of the standout things is how good his voice is on it.
Great.
And I really, really love his vocals on it. And I think he's clearly done a lot of work on it.
Yeah.
I don't know how old these kids are. You know, they could be like 19 when they're recording this, in which case, you know,
that
goes a long way. But yeah, I think they I think it sounds very good. I don't know if the production is totally my favorite. It's one of those where the loudest thing on everything is the snare drum.
Yeah, I think it sounds pretty good for 94.
Oh no, I don't dislike it. And it's definitely that sort of fat thing. It's trying to give that it's trying to give propaganda. Like they all were at this time. I just think it might be one of the less successful attempts to give propaganda. I wouldn't start with this if I were introducing someone to Strung Out, which is essentially what I have done. I apologize. because I even had a quick look at Teenage Wasteland Blues, and Subterranean Teenage Wasteland Blues. I gave that a quick spin after this and was like, oh, already you can see the leaps and bounds they came in, like 2 years of probably like 2 years of quite heavy touring, and stuff like that. And so Strung Out's overall story is definitely one of success.
Yeah.
In that, you know, they are. And also, let's face it, this is a NoFX podcast. If we have a look, it took NoFX a lot longer.
Yeah, it really did.
To reach their peak than it did for. Strung Out were already, you know, leaps and bounds ahead. So it is all relative, I suppose. I don't like saying bad things about, or not bad, but, you know, negative things about bands that I like and generally wish well. But sometimes, you know, you've got to, you can't just lie about it and go, no, everything they do is amazing. Because otherwise, then you're just a K-pop stan, aren't you? And there are, you know, it's really funny. I mean, punk in general and the fans and stuff, it's like people love everything that a band does until a certain point, and then they hate it all. Like, oh no, they released that album and that's tainted all the albums that came before it. No, it hasn't, you fanny. You know, it's just such a really weird way to think about it. But I honestly don't know why they put that little 3 second semi-scar thing, because the guy clearly isn't playing like scar properly. He's got some weird sort of calypso-y bit in the middle of it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was just because, oh well, you know, it is of the time, you'd better put a bit of that in, we're all doing that these days, or if that was something that actually, because I don't recall hearing anything like that in anything Strung Out did ever again. You know, it's like when it pops up on an Offspring album, you're like, oh, are they, oh, all right, apparently we're doing ska now. Okay. So yeah, Talking to Myself is about getting high. Again, the harmonies are good. All the stuff they do well is really, really good on this. Like all of the musical stuff is good, but it's just lacking the melodies. And funnily enough,
when we go into track 6 with Broken, you kind of do get some melody. You get a lot more like vocal melody, but I don't enjoy it.
Fair enough. It's because it's sort of a bit of a nothing to me. I've written the solo is boring.
Yeah.
And for a band like Strung Out to have a boring solo, it's like, these guys are fucking beasts.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They are very, very.
And again, I think they could have been very young when they were doing this. I think they, you know, they were learning. It's, you know, I would expect a guitarist to be better. If they're a live touring guitarist and they've been doing that since they were in their teens, and they're still doing it now, making a living, I would expect a guitarist at 40 to be better than they were at 19. Because how can you not be if you're constantly playing the guitar and working on it and trying to improve? So, you know, it's like saying, the music on Green Day's first album is rather rudimentary. I'm like, yeah, weren't they 17 when they recorded that? It's like, what do you expect them to be able to do? But yeah, they've got like a strummed bass intro that's sort of all right. It's quite a big crescendo. Like, musically, it sets up quite a lot. But, yeah, it's sort of a lot of... Yeah, it's okay. I think Ashes, the next song, picks up a little bit for me.
The next two songs, I think, are the best songs on the album. I think they are good.
Yep. Ashes, it's got the clean intro and then, like, a full intro. It's fast and chuggy. It's got some of those really nice guitar fills, a bit like Lagwagon have.
So these two next tracks are my two favourite. They are also like the most Lagwagon-y the band sounds on the album.
True.
Like the only thing that they are missing is like noticeably they just don't have the vocals of Joey Cape. And what I get from these next two tracks is I'm kind of like, it makes me appreciate Lagwagon all over again. Because, you know, we enjoyed Trash. But I don't think that we were like, oh, you've got to listen to Trash. I think we were like, yeah, no, this is good. But listening to this has made me realize like how good Trash is, and particularly how good Joey Cape is at finding the melodies on top of what's a relatively fast technical guitar music with, you know, like a metal influence. I think Joey Cape does a really good job of finding these melodies, because I don't think it's easy to do.
No, and I think that Strung Out get very good at that.
Yes, I'm
eventually.
Sure.
At the moment, they did not start off on even blocks for that, I don't think. And yeah, also the thing is that a lot of these chord sequences, like I found myself, I was driving home from somewhere listening to this, and I found myself on the M62 like doing the hand jive, because because some of these chords are like da 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 da, and it's like, if you can't find a melody in that chord sequence that's been used since the 50s that every cunt's had a go at and found a new melody to go in it, it's like, wow. You know, but then everyone gets better at their shit when they practice it, you know, I guess. But yeah, I like Ashes and Falter a lot. pardon me. There's a big crescendo ending, and the harmonies are particularly good on Ashes as well. It's got those fun little guitar fills at the end of vocal lines and stuff like that, and I think that's really, really good. Falter's got a really sort of Iron Maiden vibe to it. The beginning, like the opening riffs sort of turns into like a little Maideny thing, and I'm like, this is where these guys shine. This is where they like really, really good putting in those sort of more Maideny things. Like even there's a No Use for a Name song. I think it's Undefeated. It's on the Hard Rock Bottom, and it starts off with this na 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 na, and it sounds like an Iron Maiden intro. And it's because I remember playing it to a mate of mine. He wasn't that interested in skate punk, but he really liked Maiden. He's like, "The fuck is this? This sounds like Iron Maiden." I'm like, it really does. And I think that a lot of these punk bands do take those, especially that early Iron Maiden, the first couple of before Bruce Dickinson joins, very, very punky and a bit more stripped, raw down the middle. And even afterwards, you know, still got some of that energy and stuff. But yeah, I felt that Falter sounded like Bad Religion meets Screeching Weasel.
Okay, yeah.
I got a pop punk Ramones core kind of angle to it somewhere in there.
Yeah.
Along with the Bad Religion thing and that Iron Maiden thing. But when you put sort of Iron Maiden and Bad Religion together, you do get Lagwagon.
And I was literally about to say, yeah, but the problem is when you put Bad Religion and Iron Maiden together, you get Lagwagon.
You do. You put them in the mincer and you get a Lagwagon burger. You know, that's just how it happens. But this one, I think Falter's got a bit more strung out idiosyncrasy to it than Ashes. But yeah, I think Falter might be the highlight of this. I really like the first song. I think the first song starts really fast. But that sounds a lot like Propaganda. I think basically once Strung Out work out who they are and carve out their own niche, like any band.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, I think Falter, they sound great, but they also sound like Lagwagon. Population Control, they sound great, but they also sound like Propaganda. I think they just need a little bit more time in the oven.
Yeah, and they get that time, and you get what Strung Out is, and it's great. And his voice gets better. He's better at writing melody.
Is this their debut?
Yes.
So, like, you compare this to Liberal Animation.
Yeah, yeah.
It's all
like
right.
Yeah. Like I said, it took NoFX a lot longer in the oven. Some would argue people have yet to turn the oven on. Then we get to Away with the Whoa Hoes.
Uh-huh.
Start, stoppy, middle eight, slow down. It's kind of cool. Great backing vocals. The solo just appears, I've written. The solo just suddenly starts out as if from nowhere. There's no, and then leaves just as quickly. But I can't pick out any of these melodies. That's the thing.
This one feels a little bit rancid to me.
Really?
Like you can hear Away. Yeah, you can hear like the bass more. So it's more a little bit more jangly than usual. And then it's got like those gang vocals. Just reminds me of a few stuff on like Let's Go. I don't know. It's more trad than a lot of the other out the rest of the album.
Maybe because it starts with that and it's sort of it's that thing of combining open strums with little bits of muting here and there. That's the sort of it's that thing of combining the thing they love about punk rock, which is that 1-2-3-4 open, you know, unmuted bar chord thing, and then little bits of like little chuggy bits and stuff. I think I get fatigued by this album quite quickly because the formula is very, very similar throughout.
Yeah, but what's frustrating with it is like they're not doing nothing though. Like they're playing really well, and I know that they are doing a lot of different stuff. So it's really impressive to make an album that sounds so similar to each other, but they're actually playing very different parts in each of the songs.
Yeah, I think maybe the production lets them down a little bit in certain ways. Like I say, that having the same snare drum thwack through really, really loudly throughout all of it.
Yeah.
Kind of colors everything, doesn't it? You know, I'm not saying it's not like Saint Anger. It's not like, you know, a real clonking sort of real big problem, but it sounds like it's supposed to sound, I guess. But yeah, so that's all fine. Alone is a bit this one feels very Pennywise.
Yeah, it does. Yeah,
it's chuggier, it's maybe a little slower maybe, but it feels a little anonymous. I think basically they strung out don't quite know who they are yet.
Yeah,
on this album. And when they do, it's glorious. And but the same with any band, you know. You, again, longer in the oven, I guess. Unclean actually has sort of quite some old school vibes. It feels quite 80s Unclean to me.
Mm, yeah. Well, there's so interesting. So I listened to the reissue, which has got like loads of extra tracks, yeah. And the tracks that come after the, you know, Another Day in Paradise. Usually finishes, those tracks are much more like I want to say like cruder. They're like they're a bit more simple, both in terms of like production and songwriting. It's quite interesting because it sounds like I know this is their debut album, but then like the other tracks that are on this reissue, like they really sound like their debut album, you know, like it sounds like an album that's made by a new band, and it feels much more like a standard hardcore album. It's much more rudimentary, and I actually prefer those tracks to Another Day in Paradise.
Well, because you've got on Unclean, you're like na 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 na. It's that sort of how a lot of hardcore from the 80s is like one chord strummed really fast while someone goes, nah, 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 and then they stop, and then the guitars go, dun, 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 nah, and then back again. And that's sort of a formula for a lot of it. And Unclean feels like that kind of approach.
Yeah.
Which I don't hate, and is obviously a vibe, and for some people is their absolute vibe. But it doesn't permit for, again, it's the melody thing that I'm coming from. And I think we both feel the same way about that kind of thing. So I find that to be a bit, a bit trickier to sort of glom onto. There's some stuff that I really, really like. That first Negative Approach EP or something like that is really, really great. It's the one, I think it's the first one. It's the one with the Reagan from The Exorcist on it.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's just something to it. There's just something a little more. There's just something a little less copy and paste. But yeah, we get to tearing through this one. This is insane. We get to Mad Mad World.
This is another like Pennywise propaganda mashup, I think. Yep.
So fast and chuggy. It's got a tempo change. There's a fade out on it, which I've just written, mate. But my patience was wearing thin by this point.
Yeah.
And, you know, given that it was like not even half an hour to get through, if your patience is starting to wear thin, then that's not great. But yeah, it was, yeah, fade out. But it's quite good, actually. It's
yeah, it is. It is one of the better tracks on
I do like Mad Mad World. But if they hadn't made me wait so long for it, I think I'd be more predisposed to celebrating it a bit more. But it is good. And then takes us to track 13, which is called 14 Days. And I don't know why that sat poorly with me, but that's purely a me thing. Nothing on strung out there. Proper metal-y, this one. Proper metal intro, all twiddly.
Because I think this is one of the better tracks because that guitar intro, I mean, that in itself is a hook, you know, like it's unusual. It stands out. So I think this is one of the better tracks, definitely.
I don't know much about the fandom of Strung Out or like what the fan favorites are, but I would bet that 14 Days is one of those ones. It starts up, people go, "Ooh," you know, and there is a melody. The backing vocals are great. You know, it's, and again, because their stock in trade is that slightly more metallic edged, complex riff metally riff kind of punk band. I imagine that this is the sort of thing that would become their calling card.
Yes.
And so I imagine 14 Days is probably one of those fan favorites. I wouldn't be surprised if this was on their set list for a very long time and may still be to this day. I don't know. Like I say, because I think I've seen Strung Out a couple of times. Definitely once was at Download when American Paradox had just been released. That was their new album. And I think that was the only one I had at the time. And they played a very American Paradox heavy set at the tent in Download 2002 or 3. And yeah, but they were a very metally band even by then. That was only, you know, less than 10 years later. But they'd released 3 albums since their first one, including that. So yeah. So what are your thoughts on this one then overall?
Like, I'm glad that I've given it a go. I want to listen to more of Strung Out because I think that all of the parts are there, you know. I don't think the results are there on this album. But as I've said, you know, when you compare them to other early releases, I think if you compare this to Liberal Animation, I think this is a good album. You know, I think this is a perfectly decent debut. I'd just like to see them further down the line having worked a few more bits out.
Well, interestingly enough, it says on Suburban Teenage Wasteland Blues, it doesn't actually have a producer listed. It has Sean Berman and Ryan Green, as engineer. So maybe the band produced it with help from the engineer, but that was 2 years later, and this received positive reviews from critics and fans alike by all accounts. Whereas it doesn't say anything about reviews. Oh yeah, Punk Planet gave it a favorable review. Whereas punknews.org gave Suburban Teenage Wasteland Blues 5 stars. I think they'd very much got it sorted even that quickly. But it's, I mean, I say definitely look at Strung Out, but maybe don't go for this one first.
Yeah.
Have a look back once if you get into them and you go, wow, these guys are really good, check out all their, you know, check out from their sophomore onwards and then go back and have a look, because it's sort of interesting, isn't it, to go back and go, oh, that's, you know, like most people don't start with Liberal Animation when they're getting into NoFX, apart from the cool people on YouTube who go, this is the only good NoFX album. But they're the same people who just write to Come to Brazil on every single social media post that anyone puts out anywhere. You know, it's fast becoming Freebird, that, isn't it? That joke. I don't know if you've seen it, where people just, they're not from Brazil, they just write Come to Brazil on everybody's Instagram posts and stuff.
I haven't seen that. That's,
it's
well
kind of funny. It's kind of funny. It's just that they go, oh, hey guys, we're doing a very special show for this particular charitable cause. Even though we've not played together in 10 years, we're doing this one thing. And people go, oh, that is cool. Oh, nice one. Oh, I hope it raises a lot of money. Come to Brazil. Read the room, pal. Read the room. A very, very short episode today. I don't know. I feel bad. I'm sure people have got plenty more to do in their lives than listen to an hour and a fucking half of us every single week.
Well, we got some good correspondence out at the top as well. I'm sure people will understand. And also, you know, we'd love to hear from Strung Out fans.
Yes, please.
You know, what are the best tracks on this album? What are your thoughts on this album? What are the albums that, you know, people new to Strung Out should listen to first? Like, what would you recommend as a starter?
Yeah, exactly. Is this considered by the Strung Out fandom community to be like vital, or is it one of those where, oh, their debut was promising? I think that's what this is. This is promising.
Yes, they're a promising band, definitely.
Yeah. So you'd listen to them, and again, it's very possible that live they're much more exciting. They don't know how to record themselves. Fat Mike hasn't been producing records for very long by this point either.
Yeah.
And everyone was trying to sound like that propaganda sound, or Fat Records with, you know, churning out propaganda like sounding bands. And yeah, they're just finding their feet, and they found them, and now Strung Out are a force to be reckoned with, and that's really, really cool. So yeah, I guess that's it. But yes, punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Let us know precisely how badly we have misunderstood this album. You know, some people have said that we're overall positive. I think I'm a bit more positive than you are in general about the, I've just got a higher threshold for stuff, I think, or maybe I don't know what it is. But then you like the new NoFX sound a lot more than I do.
Yeah, no, I really do like the kind of thing,
which I don't dislike, but I don't think I get as excited about it as you do, maybe.
I think it's nice to see a band like NoFX, you know, find that new sound, find that new era, because I think they've kind of been making Coaster for a long time now. You know, I think even First Ditch Effort was a bit coastery. I think they've moved on the sound a little bit.
The production style was quite different.
Yes, it was. Yeah. But I think that's down to the producer rather than the band.
Yeah. Well, like you say, we suspect... it was Ali Bryce who suspected that the producer on First Ditch Effort, Cameron Webb,
yes,
has had a lot to do with that album being the way it was.
I think,
I'm inclined to agree. So so there we go. So that's it. And also, if you've got any other 1994 albums, please make them 1994, because I know what happens when you go, what other albums should we look at from 1994? People go, oh, there's this. You go, yeah, none of those are from 1994. I accidentally spent 2 days listening to Pennywise only to realize that their album was from 1995, so we had to change partway through.
And maybe when we've done everything that's worth chatting about in 94, we can progress to 95.
We're only doing that, we're only focusing on that because it is 2024. It's a 30-year thing, and that's a big deal for skate punk, US punk, whatever you want to call it. That's why we're doing this. This is maximum a year long project, with a year-long series with regards to that. Then peer pressure will just be about all the bands that we associate with NoFX irrespective of the year, which will probably compare to whatever year, whatever album was closest to NoFX coming out at the time as well. So yeah, anyway, we'll dive into the outro. So yeah, see you in a bit. Outro.
A strung outro.
I like it a lot. A strung outro, yes. I always feel a little bit bad when no album that we've ever talked about has left me feeling as low as Heavy Petting Zoo, and I've no idea why. I just remember feeling really depressed at the end of that episode because I didn't have much good to say about it. Whereas it turns out I do have quite a lot of good things to say about Another Day in Paradise.
Yeah, I was worried that I was going to be really rude about this album, but I think I've been relatively nice.
I don't think you've been rude about it. I mean, the thing is that you can say you didn't enjoy something without being rude.
I did come up with one rude thing that I will say now for the enjoyment of the listeners, because I think the listeners quite like it when we're unreasonably mean about bands.
People like saltiness, definitely. Yeah.
But listening to the debut album of Strung Out, I was kind of like, it felt like someone had asked the question, what if Pennywise was full of fucking nerds? There, that's the meanest thing I have to say about this album.
It's very funny. I don't entirely agree, but it is funny.
You know, like if Pennywise were like really into Star Wars, I think they'd make this.
I know. I just think if Pennywise sort of did their music theory homework, that's the sort of nerd. Yeah. That's the sort of nerd I was thinking of. I wasn't really thinking of like a sci-fi enthusiast. I was thinking of, oh, what's the relative minor of C? It was like that's the sort of the circle of chords kind of the circle of fifths. Kids, that's
if
what,
you taught Fletcher how to play like a diminished eighth,
absolutely. And he loved it,
yeah.
Whoa, like really enjoyed it, like, yeah, thought it was great, yeah. That's the kind of thing, yeah. That was the sort of nerd I envisioned, yeah.
That's my hot take for this episode.
It's good, we have to do more hot takes, people love hot takes. Tell you what, not as much as people loved hearing us talk about Half Album,
yeah.
Half Album is already one of the most popular episodes we've ever done.
I think like new releases like really spark an interest in people, don't they?
Yes. Also, we'll talk about this now a little bit. We were made privy to the live recording, the official recording of the Lintz gig from last year that NoFX did on their tour.
Oh yes, I've heard of this. I should
basically
check it out.
Lintz in Switzerland. Or similar, Austria? Somewhere Germanic in the middle of Europe. Anyway, geography, I don't know. But it was a well-known gig because Mike had laryngitis.
Mm-hmm.
Could barely sing, could barely talk. And because they record all of these last gigs, this last tour, they're like, yeah, here are the, they're going to release them on vinyl and MP3. And someone shared it. And obviously, I listened to it. And very interesting. Melvin sings the majority of the songs.
Oh, really? I thought that Karina was singing.
Karina
most of the
sings
songs.
A couple of songs. Well, they were describing it saying Karina sings a couple of songs. Like, yeah, she sings the songs that she always sings.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like All Out of Angst and stuff Lone like Lines. That. Yes, I don't think they did Laurie on this one. Melvin does most of the singing. Hefe obviously sings the songs that he sings. Mike sings a couple of bits here and there. But, he's talking. So he's like whisper. It's he sounds fucked. Like not fucked up, but like his voice sounds absolutely ragged. And they say, oh, we're going to come back. We're going to try and do another show in Austria before we finish because we need to do a better one. Or Switzerland, wherever it is. They said, yeah, we're going to try and come back. But hearing Melvin sing all of these NoFX songs, really interesting.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, I'm going to have to listen to it now because I think he's great.
It's a really interesting one. He sings great. I really like it.
I think he's the most likely to continue touring, right? Because people will go and see Melvinator, I think.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I don't know if he'll tour. He might do more localized stuff because he and Matt Stocks are DJing both nights after the Brixton gigs. Mm.
And I've seen he's been playing with Smelly and a couple members of High Standard. They call it No Standard.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I've seen they've played a few shows recently.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, I don't know. I think so. I think he's still got live music to do.
Mm.
I really, really enjoyed listening to it. If that was the last time I thought I was going to see NoFX, and it was Melvin singing it all, I don't know how I'd feel, actually. I mean, I would be okay with it, but because I know I would be. I understand why some people wouldn't be, but well, I know that I would be fine with that.
We like the chaotic nature of NoFX. We like that, you know, not every NoFX show is a good show. They're just NoFX shows.
Yeah.
So, like, we like that rich tapestry. You know, like, I've seen NoFX twice be not very good and then twice be very good. And so, like, I like that balance. So, like, having seen them good twice, I'd happily see them once where Mike's voice is fucked and Eric's singing most of the songs because it's, like, another thing that I've seen, you know?
I think it's really, really good. I understand that Red and I both come from a stand-up and improv background, so chaos to us is pretty appealing.
Yeah.
Because there's
you don't
nothing
want every show to be identical.
Exactly. There's nothing we enjoy less than doing our own stupid sets exactly the same way each time. It's got to be different each time. You've got to play with what's happening in the room, what's already happened, you know, and all of these kind of things. And so, and I think that it is more punk to do the show with everyone else pitching in and doing the, you know, singing where they need to, than to go, oh, we've called it off. You know, it's I think it's really, really cool. So yeah, if you can find out where you can get that, if you can, I'm sure someone will slap it on YouTube because it'll be the most interesting bootleg of all of them. You know,
yeah,
there'll be someone, and we know who it is, Ali Bryce, who will try and listen to all of the last shows. Love you, Ali. And as he should, he will enjoy that immensely. But I think the Lintz one will be probably the most interesting one because it just gives you an idea. Because he's, I mean, I don't know if he's using like a, I think Mike's had a teleprompter at some gigs when they've been doing like some of the older songs or songs that they've not done in a while, mm-hmm. stuff like that for the lyrics. I don't know if Melvin had that set up for him or whatever, but he sings really confidently and really, really well. And he's like doing his own inflections and his own.
He's been a touring musician for over 30 years.
Exactly.
Like,
he
knows his shit.
Exactly.
Like one of the best and tightest live bands I've ever seen. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Korn. Because of course they are. They've been touring for like,
yeah.
you know, 30 years. Of course they're fucking tight. Yeah. They're Korn.
And how do you make a slack stringed shitty rattle tight? Fucking practice, mate.
Yeah.
How do you make that tight? I mean, that's impressive. That yeah. is fuck Flea, fuck Matty Freeman. That is the most impressive bass player in the world.
Fieldy.
If you can turn that sloppy, slack-stringed rattle into something tight AF, then you're doing way better. What are they yeah. doing? Standard tuning. Ugh. Fannies. So, you know. So that's it. They're not. They haven't got their full lineup anymore. They're full of lineup anymore. One of them became a born again Christian, another one of them realised he was in Korn. Oh, I'm a bitch. I fucking hate Korn. Bollocks. Anyway, no, actually, the first album's really like genre important. Yeah, whatever.
I think it's the second one that's the goodie, isn't it? Follow the Leader.
I've no idea. I do like it when you make silly noises though. That's funny. I like that a lot. That Are You Ready bit at the beginning of that first Korn album. I can't remember who it was. I think it might be Mark Burrows who said that the problem with nu metal is that it peaked exactly 45 seconds into the first into like the first major nu metal release, and after that it's all been shit. Are you ready? And then that sort of first big hit of the drum and all that stuff, it's like, oh, that's pretty good. And then the rest of it's like, is that it? Well done, no one cares. You know, it's like, oh, you think you're hard. Nice one. Yeah, so anyway. That was all about Strung Out, apparently. We did a lot of non-Strung Out stuff, but that's okay. You got anything exciting coming up, Rod?
We are going to go and see Frank Turner on the weekend.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we are. Yes, in 2 days' time. That's exciting. Mm-hmm. I'll be dropping my girlfriend off at the Leeds Horror Con. And then, and then skipping over to Boom. Support your local venues, people. They're really, really important to keep going. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit me. I've got... on the 10th, I'll be at the Queer Lit Club in Manchester at the Social Refuge.
Oh, yes, of course. Lovely game.
Quick little spot there, in and out. And then, oh, gosh, the week after that. Oh, I'm actually doing a full preview of Poser at the Comedy Balloon on the 15th, Wednesday the 15th, which is just as well because...
It's in Manchester, that.
That's Manchester, the Ape and Apple, which is just as well because on the 18th, I'm doing it at the Temple in Brighton for the part of the Brighton Fringe at 3:30 in the afternoon. That one's free. They're both free. So if you want to see Poser, because I think then I've only got Chippenham Comedy Festival booked in later in the summer. And that's it for Poser so far this year. I'll hopefully book some more in, and maybe if I get buying a house under control and stuff, maybe do maybe a partial run at the Fringe next year. The Edinburgh Fringe, I mean, the biggie. Because ideally, because I've already got plans for the next show after this, and so I want to sort of get Poser really good. Ideally, just record it somehow, even if it's, you know, a small venue just with an invited audience, and then have that as a record forever, and then I can work on the next thing. Because even though I'm really enjoying it, it's, you know, it's doing the same thing a lot, and that makes me itchy. So, you know, onwards and upwards. But it is really, really good fun. Toby Haydoke of XS Malarkey was incredibly complimentary about the bones of it. So,
oh, great.
That was very, very nice. Anyway, thank you so much for listening. punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. And we will see you next week. Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to Punk Rock Elite. It was a Pick Scraped and Fruitcake co-production by Eddie French and Red Redmond. If you're not following us on Instagram or subscribe to the podcast, please do. The main theme and production was done by Eddie French. Please contact us at punkrockelitepodcast@gmail.com. Thank you.